Rabbi Sabolatsky is not only just an incredible Talmid Chacham, but one of my personal Rabbeim and one of the great Marbitei Torah and Talmidei Chachamim in the New York, New Jersey area. He is a Rosh Hashiva at Yeshiva University, also a graduate of their Kol El Elyon, Shul Rav in Bergenfield, New Jersey, a member of the Rabbinical Council of Bergen County. But what makes Rabbi Sabolatsky so special and so unique to me as a Marbitei Torah is his amazing lucidity and clarity in the way that he can explain the most incredible and complex topics in a clear and comprehensible way. So without further ado, I'd like to have, on behalf of myself, about the Yeshiva Ram administration, all of our partners here at Kol Yom Rishon, to try and share that opportunity to hear some of that lucidity and clarity and pure Torah with you, Rabbi Sabolatsky. Thank you very much.
Probably expecting me to speak for a very long time. So. Thank you to everybody for joining us for this morning. What more appropriate way than this to spend the days leading up to Shavuos? Special thank you to the host, to the sponsors for this morning's event. Most halakhic questions that are presented are individual shailas. Individual questions, question of Shabbos, Nuchas Kashrus, they're all important. Rav has to take every shaila seriously, but at the end of the day, an individual asks the question, they hope you get the right answer. Sometimes you have a little bit more important questions, they're communal policies. At Seaboard, an entire Jewish community presents a shaila, what to do? An even more significant question. And sometimes you have a shaila that's even more important than that, something which is communal in the sense of something that affects the entire Jewish people, a Klal Yisrael type of a question. Even within shailas that relate to Klal Yisrael, we could further break down those kinds of shailas. There are some Klal Yisrael shailas, some questions that relate to the Jewish people, but are temporary in the sense of their particular question, a particular time and age. And the truth is that down the line, in 100 years from now, it's probably not going to make all that much of a difference what the particular answer was given. And then you come to what I think are perhaps the most important questions that affect Klal Yisrael. Those questions that not only are important for our generation, but are going to have an impact for Dorei Doros, for all generations to come. And particularly, this area of halacha that we're going to speak about this morning clearly falls into that category. And those are the halachas concerning geirus, concerning conversion. Clearly, the standards of geirus, the standards of conversion, it's colloquially called, who is a Jew? Of course, they're not only individual questions, they're questions that relate to the entire Jewish community, and they relate to the Jewish community now, as well as for many, many, many generations to come. So let's, with understanding a little bit about the severity of some of the issues that we're going to begin to discuss this morning, let's try to analyze from the sources, from the Mekomos themselves, and try to get a little bit of a better understanding just what are some of the real issues that are taking place in Hilchos Geirus today. So before we can discuss a particular Shaila L'maisa, we have to get a little bit of a background to some of the concepts behind Geirus. And let's begin with the first of the Marmikomos, the Marmikomos sheets, which is the Rambam in Hilchos Yisrebiya in Perek Yud Gimel. The Rambam is quoting from the Gemara in Maseches Krisos. I put the Rambam on because the Rambam really says it even clearer. The Rambam begins in Halacha Aleph, B'shloshet Devarim, Nichnasu L'Yisrael L'Bris, B'Mila U'Tvila V'Korban. The Rambam begins what sounds like just a mere historical statement, that there were three events that took place that accomplished, in a sense, Klal Yisrael to convert, to become Klal Yisrael. Of course, this is absolutely appropriate for these days, because these are the days of the year when these events actually took place. There were three distinct things that took place which transformed the Jewish people from being B'nai Noach, or being regular non-Jews, into becoming Am Hashem. One of them was Bris Mila, the other was Tevila, immersing in a mikvah, and the third was the offering of Karbanos. So the Rambam then in Halacha Beis continues, when exactly did these things take place? Mila ha'isa b'mitzrayim, shenema v'chal ora lo yochal bo, that the Mila that took place right before that first Karban Pesach, that was a Mila for the purpose not only to enable the Jewish people to eat in Karban Pesach, but that had a Mila, that was a Mila which in effect transformed them and endowed them with Kedushas Yisrael. Malos ha'moshe Rabbeinu shekulam bitlu brisimila b'mitzrayim chutz b'shevet Levi v'alzanemo brisli and tzorum. And the Rabbi just adds on to us a piece of historical information, which we can come back to in a little while, why this is critical for us, that all the years that the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, so for the most part they did not observe the mitzvah of brisimila like they were supposed to, with the exception of the Levim. And as such, when they were about to leave Mitzrayim, Moshe had to perform a brisimila for just about all of the Jewish males at the time. So that first mila at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim was part of the process to endow the Jewish people with Kedushas Yisrael. Then if we go on to Halacha Gimel, the Rambam tells us that immersion in the mikveh took place immediately before Matan Torah. Literally the days that we're holding in today, the first of the Shloshes of Mehagbala, when this mitzvah was given, that the Jewish people had to immerse in the mikveh. Not only did they have to immerse themselves, they had to immerse their clothing as well. The korban, and where does korban, where does the sacrifice fit into this picture? These are the kavanos that are related to us in the end of Parshas Mishpatim, which were associated with Matan Torah. So it's these three events that took place, the Mila, the Tvila, and the offering of a Korban, that makes up the background of how B'nai Yisrael were Nichnasu L'Bris, how they became, in effect, Jewish in the very first place. So up until now, what we've been doing is giving a lecture on Jewish history. How does this play out for us? Halacha L'maisa comes the Rambam and Halacha Dalet and tells us, V'chein L'doros. This halacha, that just as B'nai Yisrael had to undergo three distinct halachic procedures, mila, tevila, and a korban, in order to be nichnas l'kedushas Yisrael, in order to enter into the covenant, in order to enter into the state of being the Am Hashem, the nation of God, so too l'doros, for all generations, kishayirta ha'akom l'kanes l'bris, when a non-Jew wants to enter into the covenant as well, and wants to become Jewish, u'l'histofeif tachas kanfe hashchina, and to literally come to dwell under the wings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Akavol of Ol Torah, and he wants to accept upon him or herself to observe the mitzvah HaTorah. So what do you do? How do you go about doing it? Where does it say in the Chumash, where does it say in the Torah itself, what the procedure is? So Chazal tell us that we have a tradition that just as the Jewish people underwent three procedures, so too for all generations, any prospective convert has to undergo those same procedures. So Rechmila Utvila V'Hatzaras Karbat has to undergo a bris mila, has to undergo tevila b'mikva, and has to offer a korban. Of course, the Rambam continues, even the kevahi, tevila b'korban. Goes without saying that if it's a female, so then of course all that is necessary is tevila b'korban. Shenemach tachem kager, ma'atem b'milu tevila b'atzos korban, afager l'doros b'milu tevila b'atzos korban. That this is the halacha, that just as the Jewish people entered in with these three procedures, so too for all generations, these three procedures are absolutely necessary. The Gemara qualifies this statement by explaining in Maseches Krisos that we also have a tradition that although Bizman Shabbos HaMikdash HaYakayim, when the temple actually stood, it was necessary for a convert to bring a korban, Bizman HaZeh, today's world where we do not have, unfortunately, a Beis HaMikdash, so the requirement of korban is lifted, and it is not necessary for a prospective convert to offer a korban today. He or she still is considered to be 100% Jewish, undergoing the procedures of Mila, or and tefila, or just tefila alone for a woman, and korban is not necessary. However, the Gemara says that the Heri Yabon HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt, so all the people who were converted between the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and today will in fact have to line up and offer korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. There was actually a practice, the Gemara relates, that there were people who would convert, they would actually take some money and put it aside and dedicate it for offering of a korban, and the Gemara says that eventually that practice was abolished because it wasn't a good policy to have money that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash lying around in your drawer. You may end up using it on something else, which would be a violation in and of itself. So, practically speaking, the korban will be brought, but also practically speaking, there's not all that much to do about it today. So the halacha stands the way it is, that mila or tefila are absolutely critical. The area of Bon HaMikdash will bring korban back into the picture, but bizman hazeh, mila or tefila are necessary, and we paskin le'ikuva, we paskin that if either the mila or the tefila is lacking for a male, or the tefila is lacking for a woman, so then the geirus is not acceptable, the conversion is not valid, and the person remains in the status, the halachic status of being not Jewish. This halacha requiring mila for a male convert. So this was a major discussion amongst the Gedolei HaRishonim, the early commentators on the Talmud, raising the following interesting question, which in the days of the Gemara itself probably was not as relevant as it is today. And the question runs as follows. What is that halacha if a male comes to convert and he happens to have already been circumcised? He was circumcised medically when he was a little baby or for some other reason, whatever the case may be. Bottom line, right now, at the age of 25, he obviously cannot undergo the process of a bris milah because he is already physically circumcised. What did that halacha say about such an individual? So, there were some opinions that maintained that, well, if he's already circumcised, so then halachically he's considered to be, in a sense, like a female. Just as the female undergoes just tevila, just immersion in the mikvah, and becomes Jewish with tevila alone, so too a previously circumcised male would be sufficient just to undergo tevila. There was such an opinion that was maintained. And others questioned that, and others said, no, not so simple. That even though it's true that you obviously cannot circumcise the person again, literally, but there is a procedure in halacha that's called hatofas dam bris. Hatofas dam bris means the drawing of a little bit of a blood, a little bit of symbolic, a token scratch, a token drawing of blood, which substitutes for the procedure of bris milah. And according to many authorities, hatofas dam bris would be required for the previously circumcised male. So since this is a suffix, this is a doubt in halacha, how we paskin, these two opinions exist in halacha, we follow in Shulchan Aruch somewhat of a compromise view, and with our practices today, we do insist on hatofas dam bris when a previously circumcised male wants to convert. However, we don't recite a bracha, we do not recite a blessing on the hatofas dam bris itself. If the person literally was not circumcised and we perform an actual bris milah, then we recite a bracha, lamul es hagerim, a special bracha on the mitzvah of doing a mitzvah of bris milah on a prospective ger. If the ger was already circumcised, and now it's a question, it's a suffix out of doubt, we don't want to take any chances to convert the person and to have a situation where he may or may not be Jewish, so we go through with the procedure of atofas dam bris, but bitar a suffix without a bracha. So this is a fairly common practice. It's a suffix pasht, a suffix d'araisa. According to those who say that it's necessary, it's probably required mid araisa. So this question comes up fairly common. Is the percentage of children, non-Jewish children in America and many other countries is still fairly high. There are always back and forth debates in the medical world about is it a good procedure or a bad procedure to medically circumcise children. But at the end of the day, there's still many, many non-Jewish children who are medically circumcised. And as such, this is a fairly common child of Bizman Hazat. To make the question even a little bit more complicated, which is unfortunately also sometimes a common question today, is the following type of a question. What if you have an individual who is born, and technically, halachically, the person is not Jewish? However, due to a little, sometimes misinformation, due to a misunderstanding, it is perceived that the child is in fact Jewish. This very often comes about if there was an incorrect conversion that was done, and not a halakhically acceptable conversion that was done in the mother previously. And you can have a situation where a little boy is born, and the assumption is that he's Jewish, nobody really looks into the situation, and the child receives a bris on the eighth day by a moel with a bracha, with bagels and lox, the works. And now, many years later, the issue comes up, and realize, not so simple, that this person was really Jewish all along. That it's quite possible that this person really halachically is not considered to be Jewish. Perhaps halachically his mother was not considered to be Jewish. So, the person wants to be Jewish, l'chol hadeyas, the last thing a person would want to do in his life is live through life as a suffix Jew, as a doubtful Jew. So he wants to be Jewish, he wants to observe the mitzvah, so first thing he does, he wants to convert properly. So he's going to go through the procedure of a gerus, or maybe bevadai, depending on the particular scenario. So going to the mikvah really is not all that difficult. Jumps into the mikvah and jumps out, not so hard. The problem is, what do we do about bris milah? So at first glance, this seems to be our original question. Just as the previously medically circumcised child, we insist on hatofas dam bris, we insist on drawing a symbolic drawing of blood, a token drop of blood, in order to satisfy those opinions that hatofas dam bris is necessary for a previously circumcised child, perhaps we can argue that the same is true for this child who was also, quote-unquote, previously circumcised, unless one can distinguish between the two. in the original case that we discussed, there the circumcision was done as a circumcision. It wasn't done as a bris milah. It wasn't done for the purpose of a mitzvah at all. It wasn't necessarily even done by a Jewish mohel. It wasn't necessarily done on the eighth day. Nothing was done properly. It was just a medical circumcision. Although medically the person is quote-unquote nimoch, he is circumcised, but a medical circumcision cannot double, so to speak, as a milah for the purposes of gerus. Maybe one can argue, in this case, although it was erroneous, perhaps the child really didn't require a bris, perhaps the child really wasn't Jewish, but Lamaisa, at the end of the day, he received the bris via Moel, the Shem Mitzvah, with the Bracha, with the works, the whole story. So maybe one can argue that a Mila L'Shem Mitzvah can double, can substitute for a Mila L'Shem Geirus, and as such would make it significantly easier for this now 25-year-old male who wants to convert. So rather than having to undergo another procedure, another surgical procedure of a Tavis Tabriz, we could simply assume that the original Mila, although it wasn't really done L'Shem Geirus, it was really done L'Shem Mitzvah, perhaps a Mila L'Shem Mitzvah can double as a Mila L'Shem Geirus. So this is a question that the Gedolei HaPoskim have debated. There are different opinions about this. It's interesting, going back a little bit to what we mentioned before, we mentioned historically that the Rambam, when he presents the halachas of Geirus, of course the model of Geirus was at Matan Torah, the original Bris Milah at the time of Geirus was really the Bris Milah that took place at Yetzias Mitzrayim, 49 days before the actual giving of the Torah. And the Rambam says that not all the Jews participated in that Bris Milah. The Shevet Levi, those Levim, those members of the Jewish people who had upheld the mitzvah Bris Milah for all the years that they were actually in Egypt, so those Levim, obviously, Moshe and Aaron included, obviously didn't have to receive a new Bris Milah. They were already Nimol. The question becomes, well, this Mila that was taking place at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim was a Mila L'Shem Geirus. This was already the beginning of the endowing the Jewish people with Kedushas Yisrael. The Mila that the Levim received as little babies 30, 40, 50, 80 years ago was only L'Shem Mitzvah. That wasn't done L'Shem Geirus. That was done for the purpose of Mitzvah. Perhaps we could find the precedent in Halacha, 3,500-year-old precedent, that just as the Levim presumably did not have to repeat their Bris Mila, didn't require at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they also became Jewish. How did they become Jewish? How did they experience a Bris Milah? The answer is the Milah they had received as children, the Toras Mitzvah, can double as a Milah L'Shem Geirus. Maybe we can invoke that halachic precedent of thousands of years ago to this common day Shaila today, that maybe a Milah L'Shem Mitzvah suffices for a Milah L'Shem Geirus. So in fact, this question, the Ramban, in his comments at Maseches Yevamos, in the sugya, the topic in the Gemara about Geirus, raises this very question, and the Ramban himself quotes two opinions. The Ramban quotes one opinion that in fact, that is true, that the Levim, when they left Mitzrayim, did not require any new Mila, and didn't require anything additionally done. And then the Ramban quotes Ve'otye Shlomar, another possible answer, is that yes, it is true that even the Levim required, believe it or not, a Hatofas Dambris at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because perhaps the Mila they received as children would not suffice for a Mila L'Shem Geirus. So this Shaila, which is a very real Shaila, Loch L'Maisa Shaila that happens, I say unfortunately because, as we all know, many times you have these kinds of questions where somebody is presumed to be Jewish and it turns out later that they either for sure weren't or possibly weren't, and the question becomes to be Megayah them once again as an adult, and the question inevitably is going to come up, if it's a male, should we insist on a Tafas Dambris? So the Ramban tells us that this Shaila that we think is a Shaila of the year 2007 is a Shaila from, I can't do the math exactly, but if you figure out 3,500 years before that, give or take a few years. So that was an old Shaila of time for Yetzias Mitzrayim. The only thing is, we're not sure how Moshe Rabbeinu Paskin. We have 2 days in Ramban, what the Tzach was. So we know the Shaila existed, we're just not sure what the answer was. But it's the same Lomdus Shaila, the same basic halachic query, namely, can a Mila L'Shem Mitzvah really double as a Mila L'Shem Geirus? So up until now, we've been focusing.
Very good. That's an excellent question.
excellent question. The answer to that question is that it's probably a machlokas the Balei Tosfos and the Ramban. The Ramban on his Perush and Chumash and Parshas Emor quotes a debate between that he had with the Balei Tosfos about that very nekuda. What exactly was the status of Bnei Yisrael, quote unquote, Kodesh Matan Torah? The particular issue that the Ramban was debating with the Balei Tosfos was, we know the halacha is that a Jewishness of an individual is determined by his mother, not by his father. Nevertheless, there is halacha that one of the dini Torahs relates to the non-Jewish world. Sometimes we have to know what particular nationality a non-Jew belongs to. There are halachas that sometimes depend upon a descendant of Ammon or Moab, etc. So the Gemara says, you follow the zocher, you follow the male. So the Tosfos and the Ramban had a machlokes. What about Kol D'Matan Torah? Did that chain of Judaism go in effect from Avram to Yitzchak to Yaakov to Yosef in that way? Or did it go from Sarah to Yitzchak, and then from Rivka to Yaakov, etc., to go through the mother? So that's an interesting question that the Rishonim debate, theoretical question, I mean, historical question. But no matter how one decides that question, it's clear from the Gemara in Maseches Krisos that something definitely changed at the time of Matan Torah. There was a Knisa LeKedushas Yisrael. So no matter what one's opinion on that machlokas is, clearly something took place with Torah's Geirus at the time of Matan Torah itself. So up until now, we've been focusing on the men, focusing primarily on the condition of Mila. Now let's move over to the next of the conditions, and that's the condition of Tevila, and that process of Tevila, which of course is something that's equally true for men and women. Sure. Right, so that's a further question, Justin. That's an excellent question in terms of the mitzvah of Bris Mila, and out of the realm of Geirus, just in terms of a regular Bris Mila. Right. That's a further question also. Tosfos Maseches Yevamos talks about that also, about the nolan mol vis-a-vis Geirus. So we'll leave that out. From the concept of nolan mol, the Gemara does speak about someone who is halachically nolan mol. Apparently, it's very, very rare to be. Sometimes, like the molim use a phrase. You know, they'll colloquially say nolan mol, but the molim, at least the molim I spoke to, have told me that it doesn't really mean an authentic nolan mol. I mean, sometimes the oral is not totally there. To have someone who's completely, absolutely nolan mol, the way the Gemara describes, is something which is extremely, extremely rare. When we speak about the condition, the process, the procedure of Tevila, so there is a particular issue that comes up in terms of Tevila, and here it's something that is, in a sense, has more of an impact on the gayness of a woman than it does necessarily for a man. The Gemara tells us the following story in the second of the Maariv Mekomos, the Maseches Yevamos, and Daf Mem Hem with Beis. Hahuda b'korale bar armayosa. There was an individual who people were saying that he wasn't really Jewish. They were questioning whether his mother's geirus, his mother's original immersion in the mikvah, had been acceptable. Amar Rav Asi said it's not a problem. Milo tovla l'nidusa. Says Rav Asi, even though there may have been some question about her original geirus, but this particular woman was in fact a Torah observant woman, and she was married, and she was observing the halachas of Taras HaMishpacha, so every month she was going to the mikvah. So the Gemara says, even if you have some kind of a pikbuk, some kind of a question about the original tzvila, the original immersion that may have taken place 25 years ago, but Lamaisa, she just went to the mikvah last week, and she just went to the mikvah a month before that, and a month before that, so that tzvila, the Shem Nidus, presumably will be acceptable as a tefillah l'shem geirus. In fact, there are some who actually bring a raya from this Gemara to our previous Shaila. Some want to compare that just as a tefillah l'shem nidus can double as a tefillah l'shem geirus, so to a mil l'shem mitzvah can double as well. So that's the question in of itself. Is that necessarily the exact same? But at least concerning our sugya of tefillah l'shem nidus, the Gemara is quite clear that when a woman goes to the mikvah, even though she's going for taras mishpacha purposes, that can at least sometimes double as a tefillah l'shem geirus. So comes Tosfos in the third of the Maariv Mekomos, Tosfos in Maseches Yevamos, and Daf Mem Hem with Beis, and Tosfos is bothered with what appears to be a very technical question, but the answer, or the correct answer to this question, is going to be critical. Says Tosfos, Milo Tavol and Idusa, Tema, says Tosfos, it's a wonder. The Amar Lekamon, the Gemara says a little bit later on in Maseches Yevamos, the Ger Tzarech Shlosha, the Mishpat Ksivnei. The Gemara says quite clear that a person cannot convert just in a vacuum. A person, a non-Jew, cannot just decide to convert by himself. But it is necessary that a Beis Din supervise the Geirus. A proper halachic court of law, a Beis Din, has to supervise the Geirus. And a Beis Din halacha is always made up of at least three members. So comes Tosfos and says, wait a second. this woman who is going to the mikvah, the Torah's Taras to Mishpacha, we're not questioning that she's going to the mikvah, but the question becomes, is it being done under the auspices of a Beis Din? Is there a Beis Din that's actually watching this woman go to the mikvah? The halacha is that three dayanim, three judges are necessary in order to supervise the geiras, and clearly that is not taking place over here. So comes Tosfos with a bomb question. How could the Gemara say that a tevila that's being done as tevila l'shem taras ha-mishpacha, how in the world can that count as a tevila l'shem geiras? Where's the Beis Din? Obviously there's no Beis Din that's actually present in the mikvah at the time. So comes Tosfos and tries to solve this problem. We're going to skip down a couple of lines in the Tosfos. We're going to skip down to the fourth line of the Tosfos, V'yei Shloma, right in the middle of the line. V'yei Shloma. Hayde ba'inan shlosha, hayde l'kabolas ha-mitzvos, avalola tevila. Says Tosfos, there are different components of the geiras process. There's the milah, and there's the tevila, and there's the karb, and things that we spoke about before. But then there's another major component of geiras that we haven't even begun to discuss yet, and that is what's called kabbalas ha-mitzvos, that the prospective geir, the prospective convert, has to accept upon himself or herself to keep the mitzvos. They have to be makabel upon themselves, olat Torah ha-mitzvos. The Rambam already had used that phrase earlier, makabel of ol Torah. So says Tosfos, which aspect of geirus, which part of the geirus procedure does it really make sense to insist that there's a Beis Din that's supervising? You need a Beis Din to supervise the tefillah. What do you need a Beis Din to supervise the tefillah? It could be a woman who's supervising. Same way you have a woman who works in the mikvah, who's helping every other woman be toveles. So too, when you have a female convert, or if you have a male convert for that matter, so you have one person who goes and helps them to be tovel, but who says that you need a Beis Din, you need an actual court present at the time of the tefillah? When do you require a Beis Din? When is it absolutely critical that a Beis Din be present? Tosa says, B'shas Kabbalas HaMitzvos, because Kabbalas HaMitzvos, that's a give and take. There's an analysis. We have to ask some questions. We have to see, is the person sincere? Is this a valid? Is this an acceptable Kabbalas HaMitzvos? There's a give and take. That makes sense to require a Beis Din. So comes Tosa in one fell swoop and says, the halacha for Beis Din to be present at the time of Geirus is really only critical at the time of Kabbalas HaMitzvos. The minig was, Tosfos writes, the custom was, the proper thing to do is to have the Beis Din there at all times. But at the end of the day, says Tosfos, if the Beis Din wasn't there at the time of the tefillah, that in and of itself would not invalidate the tefillah, would not invalidate the geiros. And therefore we can understand the story about how the tefillah for the purpose of Taras HaMishpacha is acceptable. But then Tosfos suggests another answer. Let's keep that a little bit more. It's three lines from the bottom. So it's the end of the line, the Yesh Mefarshim. Tekevan diyadua lakol shetavla, ki ilu omdim shamda ami. Comes tells us in an about face and says, what we said before may not necessarily be true. Maybe the Beis Din has to be present at the time of the tevila also. You have to have a Beis Din, quote unquote, seeing the tevila. It's not enough for them just to listen to the Kabbalah. I mean, it's supposed to have to actually be present at the time of the tevila. It says, tells us, what does it mean to be present? What does it mean to see the tevila? What if I know with absolute certainty that a tevila is taking place, even though I didn't actually see it with my own eyes? We have a phrase in English, seeing is believing. Well, comes to us and says, sometimes you can believe something to be true, even if you didn't actually see it. If you know the facts, if you have very, very strong reason to believe that this is in fact what happened, halachically that is as if you actually saw it. Therefore, Tosfos makes a simple calculation. We're dealing with an observant woman, so the assumption is she's married, the assumption is that she's going to the mikvah once a month, so everybody knows that this woman is going to the mikvah, even though there wasn't an actual bathed and present shas ma'is at the time of the tefillah itself, that doesn't matter. Halachically, it's as if we actually saw the tefillah itself. So the way Tosfos resolves this dilemma, how could it be that the tefillah for the purpose of Taras HaMishpacha can suffice for tefillah l'shem geiros, what happened to the Beis Din? So Tosfos says one of two answers. So the first answer is the Beis Din wasn't really necessary altogether at the time of the tefillah. The second answer is the Beis Din was necessary, but it was there. Halachically it was there. Since we know the woman is being toveles, it's as if we actually saw it ourselves. It's interesting that Rav Moshe Feinstein quoted this Tosfos in a totally different context, way out of the realm of Hilchas Geiros. Rav Moshe Feinstein quoted this Tosfos is part of his famous leniency about Chol of Yisrael. The Mishnah says, You saw there's some kumchis outside. Talk about that a little bit. So comes, getting close to Shavuos, let's talk a little bit about melachis. So comes the Mishnah, Maseches Avodah Zarah, and tells us that one is only permitted to drink milk that was milked by a non-Jew if there was a Jew present who was watching the milking process. The reason being that since milk that comes from a non-kosher animal is considered to be not kosher, just because the non-Jew comes and tells you that the milk is from a cow, so in halacha, we cannot accept his word in the realm of kashrus, and therefore, when he presents you with a cup of milk, how do you know? Maybe it's camel's milk, maybe it's pig's milk, maybe it's another animal's milk. How do you know that it's 100% cow's milk? So therefore, the halacha requires that a Jew be present, Yisrael Roeh, there has to be a Jew actually watching the milking process. So Rabbi Shafankin was asked the question, and many other posts were asked as well, what if you have a setup, which is a little bit different than the days of the Gemara, what if you have government regulations, and you have an entire setup in place that nobody's going to play around with a milk supply, you have a major multi-billion dollar dairy business, so when they run a little bit low on cows, they're not going to go run down to the next farm and get a couple of pigs in and add some of the milk. Someone's probably going to catch them. They're going to lose a lot of money if they try to do that. They're going to end up getting serious fines for doing that. So says Moshe, you know when you buy a container of milk in, I don't know what the big supermarkets here are, I don't know, we call ShopRite where I come from. So you walk into ShopRite, you buy yourself a container of milk. So basically, the U.S. government is attesting to the fact that this is 100% cow's milk. Was there a Jew standing there and watching that this is cow's milk? No. So there are some who said, you can't drink it. It's treif, because it's chol of akum. It's not Yisrael or Eyu. There's no Jew watching it. The entire industry of chol of Yisrael is working with that assumption that you require Yisrael or Eyu. That's to be an actual Jew standing there, pshuta k'mashmo, watching the milking process. And Rav Moshe argued that, technically speaking, if you live in a country such as America, where the government regulation is strict enough, so therefore you don't have to be concerned. And says Rav Moshe, that's called chol of Yisrael. Stop chat. People misquote Rav Moshe. People say Rav Moshe said you don't have to keep Chol of Yisrael. Of course you have to keep Chol of Yisrael. It's a Mishnah. It's just that Rav Moshe redefined Chol of Yisrael. Rav Moshe said Chol of Yisrael means either you actually see it or you know for a fact that it's cow's milk. That's also called halachically Chol of Yisrael. So Rav Moshe said, how do I know that this is true? That sometimes the halacha accepts knowledge even in place of actual physical re'iyah, in fact, in place of actually physically seeing. So says Rav Moshe, the Tosas, the Maseches Yevamos, the Dachmem Hamud Beis, that just as Tosas quotes one opinion that Beis Din has to see the Geirus, but knowing that the tevilah is taking place is the halacha equivalent of seeing, so too in the realm of Chol Yisrael, the same would be true. So again, we're not talking about Chol Yisrael now. Maybe you'll bring me down another week. We'll talk about that. But suffice it to say that this Tosfos is important not only in terms of Chol Yisrael, it's important in other areas of halacha as well. It's this discussion, this Gemara, this Tosfos that became the source for a very real shaila that comes up. This is already an old-time shaila, but it's a common shaila. Whenever we have a geirus of a woman, so the question becomes, just practically speaking, what should the procedure be in terms of a Beis Din being present? So clearly for the Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, the Beis Din has to be there, that everybody agrees to, but must the Beis Din really be there at the time of the Tevilah itself, at the time of the actual immersion? Is it sufficient for the Beis Din perhaps to be standing in the outside room, not to literally be watching the Tevilah? Or is it necessary, of course, in a way of a tznius, to do it in such a manner that they arrange it in such a way that they're watching the tevilah without being a breach of tznius? Is that absolutely necessary or not? So many rabbanim are machped on this. Rav Moshe himself is machped on this. That when we do a geirus for a woman, so we do insist, we try as best as possible that the Beis Din should actually be watching the tevilah itself, and it's done in such a way that the woman is covered up with a sheet up until her head, and then all the Beis Din could see, they just see her head. They ask her a few questions in the mikvah, and then she goes down, and then the rabbanim leave the room to ensure the best possible way in terms of tznius, trying to bend over backwards to see the actual tevilah itself. Those who disagree, those who maintain that it's not absolutely necessary for the Beis Din to be present watching the actual tevilah, as long as they know for a fact that the tevilah was taking place, for argument sake, they're standing in the next room, they can hear that the tevilah took place, or they have other ways of ascertaining that the tevilah actually took place, perhaps that would be sufficient as well. So there are different practices amongst the Mesadrei Geirus today as to how to go about doing this. The simple pshat in that law, the simple pshat in the Shulchan Aruch is, the simple quoting in the Gemara is, that at least the chetchila, the Geirus should be done in such a way that the Beis Din is actually watching itself, and again, to be done in the most appropriate way, that it shouldn't be a violation of Hilchos Tznius. So what we do now, we have some of the background, at least some of the shaylos that come up in terms of the milah, in terms of the tefillah. Now a new shaila comes up in terms of the interplay between the two. So when we speak about a male converting, so we insist on milah, we insist on tefillah. Is there any specific order of things? Is it necessary that the milah precede the tefillah or not? So if we take a look at the fourth of the Marmar Kamos, Tosfos in Maseches Yevamos, Tosfos observes that the way the Gemara always describes the process of Geiros, it always has Mila preceding the Tevila. But Bilna Samiyad, Mashma, Shamila Kodim Tevila, Uchidiyomar Ein Geir Achiyimo V'yitvul. Many places in Shas, because I'll use that phrase, Mila, and then followed by Tevila. And Tosfos says, you know, we're not really sure, is that really true? Is it really Dafka? It has to be that way? Or maybe even the opposite way would also be acceptable. Why in the world would one insist that it has to be a specific order? So there are some Rishonim who maintain that there is a principle in Hilchos Tevila, what's called Tovel V'Sheretz B'Yado. If a person goes into the mikvah and they're holding on to something which is Tameh as they're going into the mikvah, so that in effect disqualifies the entire Tevila. Tevila is supposed to be Metahar you, and when you're holding on to Tumah, so how can you even begin to discuss Tevila? So there are some who want to bring the following mashal and want to say that a person who's still at Orel, they haven't been circumcised, they don't have a bris milah yet, they're going to go into the mikvah, so they're still in effect tummy, quote unquote. It's a different type of a tumah. It means they're still not Jewish. They're still holding on to the orla, and they're first going to the mikvah. That's not acceptable. You have to first get rid of the tumah. First you have to surmerai, you have to remove the orla, and then afterwards you can begin to discuss the vila of a mikvah. That's the question. Is that really a good marshal? Is that illustration really correct or not? So Tosfos wasn't sure. What is the halacha? So Tosfos tries to bring the fascinating proof, the tame of Yonah. There is a Gemara later on in Maseches Yevamos that speaks about a pregnant woman converting, and the Gemara tells us that a woman, when she is pregnant, a non-Jewish woman comes to convert, so she can convert at the time, and she goes to the mikvah, so the subsequent child that's going to be born does not have to convert, that the baby, the fetus inside, is covered in fact, is considered to have undergone tevila with the mother's tevila. There is a technical question in the Gemara, just what exactly that means. Why exactly is that true? There is a general question, a halachic question out of the realm of Geirus. What is the relationship between the fetus and the mother? Do we say that the fetus is considered to be a separate entity? Or do we say the fetus is really part of the mother's body? But the Gemara uses the phrase, uber yerech imo, still considered to be physically part of the mother's body. Or do you say uber lav yerech imo, that's considered to be a separate and distinct entity? Somebody told me that those who've been in New Jersey, who've drove, I don't know if there are carpools here also, but those who know the George Washington Bridge will appreciate this. So in peak hours, you're only allowed to go in certain lanes of the bridge if you have three people in the car. So apparently there was a couple, and the wife was expecting. They went in the carpool lane, and they were pulled over. And the woman was screaming, "What do you mean? We have three people. Take a look." And the cop wrote her up a ticket. Apparently he went to the traffic court, and he said, "Well, it's machlokes. This is today. It's a Gemara Nevama. They couldn't exactly figure it out." That would be an interesting idea. The question is, would that be enough of a reason to really invalidate the other way? That's the question. So Tosfos raises the following issue. Tosfos says, it's interesting that the Gemara speaks about a pregnant woman converting, and there clearly the tevila is taking effect on the fetus first. Now when this baby is born, if it's a boy, presumably this boy is going to require a milah. So it's going to be a tevila preceding a milah. So Tosfos says, interesting, that here you have a precedent in halacha that a tevila could precede a milah. So maybe we could say it's not unique to a pregnant woman, but that may be true by all of Hilchos Geiros. Anytime you could flip the order, it doesn't really matter. Tosfos says, the Omer read the shiny house of the Akat L'Chazi L'Mila. Tosfos says, you can't necessarily bring a proof from there, because there, you can't do a Mila, at least until modern day technology. It's hard to do a Mila in the olden days in utero. So maybe today they can. I don't know, a lot of interesting things. But in those days, says Tosfos, obviously you couldn't do a Mila yet, so it's not comparable to the case where you have a person in front of you. Well, you could do the Mila first. Tosfos back and forth, hemming and hawing, not really sure what the halacha is going to be. Oh, very good. Excellent. You're mechavin to the Ra'ah. The Ra'ah gives that dichoy. The Ra'ah, one of the Gedolei Rishonim, says that they don't understand what Tosfos is talking about in the first place. That the baby is Jewish with the tevila alone. That may be what Tosfos is referring to also. That may be Tosfos' dichoy, perhaps. That's a further question. The Ramban and the Ra'ah, right. Baruch Hashem, everyone mechavin to all the different opinions in Rishonim about that. Excellent. So this is somewhat an unresolved question. How do we paskin laloch and shulchan aruch? So we paskin as a sfeik of the din. We're not really sure what to do, and therefore we would never want to do this. We would never want to reverse the order. There really is no reason to reverse the order. Why in the world should you reverse the order and get into trouble and get into a machlokas of rishonim? Just do the gerus normally. So I say in the normal circumstances, no reason to reverse the order. But every once in a while, you get a strange situation. So those who have learned in the Y-Bais Medrash will appreciate this. So I guess I have to date myself. This goes back to the days before everyone had cell phones in the Bais Medrash. Well, I guess everyone was observing the rule about not having the cell phones on. Mistumble, we doubt everybody will have schos. Goes back, I don't know, about 15 years ago at least. And I was sitting in the Bais Medrash, and somebody came up to me and said, there's somebody on the payphone outside. Remember the good old payphones outside the Bais Medrash. I said, weddings have changed fundamentally because of cell phones. It used to be, if you go to a wedding, you'd spend most of the wedding standing in line to make a phone call by the payphone. Now you can have 40 payphones, and probably none of them work. Nobody uses payphones anymore. So getting back, that was just an aside. Getting back to the story. So I walk over to the payphone, and there's somebody, a fellow I knew from yeshiva, he's on the phone. He says, hi, who am I speaking to? I said, Tzvi Sabalowski. He says, okay, listen, I have a very important child that has to be resolved right now. I'm in Peru right now, and we're in the middle of supervising 92 gerusim that are taking place. Apparently there was a whole group of people who there was some kind of a question about their status as Jews, and they were apparently all in the process of moving to Israel, and I think the Rabbanut wanted to solve the problem before they came into Eretz Israel. So they had sent a delegation, one of them, one of our people from our yeshiva, but somehow, I don't know how the word he got mixed into this, but they're in the middle of 92 gerusim now. I said, okay, talking about a child that's relevant for a lot of people. So he says, so we just have one small technical question. Okay, what's the question? Can we reverse the order? Can we do the tzvila before the mila? He said, well, it is a machlokas of Rishonim. It's 2 days of Shukhanah. Why in the world are you doing this? He said, well, there's a cholera epidemic in Peru, and apparently we were told that it wouldn't be such a good idea for them to have the mila first before the tzvila. And again, I don't know enough about cholera. I just knew enough that I was happy I wasn't in Peru supervising that particular gerus. So that was the question. So I said, you know, I don't feel that I'm necessarily the person to ask at the time. Maybe somebody a little higher than me should decide that. I don't know what ever happened, but that was the only time I was presented with this shayla halacha lemaisa on the spot on the YU payphone. If you switch the order between tevila and mila, what's the halacha? So it's a smake of the din and shulchan aruch. What happened there, I can't tell you. Yes, that would be like a shtickle fake a little bit, right? You know, would we be willing like to be mitzvah if you fake us together, perhaps. So up until now, we've been speaking about some important issues in terms of geiros, but believe it or not, the issues that we've been talking about now are the easy parts. Are the mila, the tefila, okay, so worst case scenario, you get another toughest number is. Worst case scenario, the Beis Din is president of the tefila. None of the questions that we've been talking about are in the sense earth-shattering that we're going to have to really, really make a decision in terms of if is this geiros acceptable or not. The worst case scenario, we'll do it over again, misafik. But now we enter into the sense, the critical realm of Geirus, something that we didn't even mention at the very, very beginning. We'd only mentioned in passing, the Rambam had it, and Tosus had it a little bit also, and that's the notion of Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. So it seems pretty clear that there is a major component of Geirus, what is called Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, the observance of mitzvahs, or the acceptance of observance of mitzvahs. If we go back to our original model of Mamad HaSinai, so we don't have to go that far, Nasa V'Nishma, Klal Yisrael were asked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, do you accept the mitzvahs? And they said, yes, we do. So in effect, there was a Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. The Rambam spoke about the Kabbalah of Ol Torah. Tosaf said Kabbalas HaMitzvahs is so critical that if the Beis Din is lacking in Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, the entire Geirus is null and void. So clearly Kabbalas HaMitzvahs is something critical and has to be done properly. The question becomes, what exactly does that mean that Kabbalas HaMitzvahs has to take place, and what would that mean properly or an improper Kabbalas HaMitzvahs? So the Rambam tells us in the fifth of the Ma'amar Kamos, the Rambam Nuchas Yisuri Biya, Perek Yigimel Ach Yitzayin, Rambam tells us, Ger Shalom Batu Acharav, what if the Beis Din who was supervising this Geirus didn't quite do their homework? Oh, Shalom Ho Di'uhu HaMitzvahs, they were in a rush that day, and they didn't quite inform the Ger about all the details, what he's getting himself into. And the Onshan, it didn't explain to him what are the ramifications of not keeping the mitzvahs. They went ahead and he went through the process of Geirus. He had a meal and a tefillah in front of a Beis Din. These were Beis Din Hadyotos. The Rambam is not using this in a very laudatory way, because after all, if they were really a valid, very authoritative Beis Din, they should have done a better job. They shouldn't have done it so quickly. They really should have informed him. Says the Rambam, after the fact, the Diyavad HaRei Zeger. Says the Rambam, the person is still considered to be Jewish. even though he wasn't really informed the details of the mitzvahs. Afilu noda shebishvil dava hu mizgaya, says the Rambam, even if we really know that he has some ulterior motive, that this person is becoming Jewish, but he's becoming Jewish for perhaps for marriage reasons, for other reasons, so even though perhaps we shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place, but the dievet, ex post facto, hol umal v'tovo, yotze michal akam, he's not considered to be a non-Jew anymore, he's basically considered to be Jewish, and the Rambam then elaborates upon it, says that if he subsequently becomes not observant, he's still treated as a Jew who went off the path, who became non-observant, but he doesn't become a non-Jew again. Once he's nichnas l'kedushas Yisrael, once he has an acceptable geirus, even a bedieved geirus, so then the geirus is acceptable and the person is considered to be a full-fledged Jew. So the Rambam is describing what's called lo hodiu ha-mitzvos. He wasn't informed about the mitzvos. So the poskim are quick to point out that the Rambam was very careful in his wording. The Rambam said lo hodiu ha-mitzvos, that he wasn't informed about the mitzvos. The Rambam does not say lo kibel ha-mitzvos. He didn't accept upon himself the mitzvahs. What's the difference? How could he accept the mitzvahs if he wasn't told about them? Well, the answer is that when we speak about Kabbalah HaMitzvahs, that we have to, again, have to accept upon himself the mitzvahs. What does that mean exactly? That means he has to accept, you have to go through every single sif katan in the Mishnah Berurah and say, do you accept to follow this, that, and that, and that, and that, and that? So the answer is clearly not the case. We don't even inform the Ger about every single one of the 613 mitzvahs. The Gemara says, Modinos el mitzvahs, mitzvahs kalos, mitzvahs chamuros. We give them a little bit of a sampling. We tell them about Shabbos, and the kashrus, tavis, mishpach, and brachas, and davening. We tell them the basics about how to live a Torah lifestyle. And then, as he progresses, as he gets older, and as he learns more, even after he becomes Jewish, so then he'll pick up all the details. So when we speak about kabbalas and mitzvahs, clearly, we're not assuming that he's been told every single detail. Even Klai saw themselves when they said Naaseh v'nishma, they didn't know what they were getting themselves into. They said, we accept whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say in the future, we accept. So clearly that's what's expected of a ger as well. Person converts, so they have to be willing to sincerely accept whatever Torah or mitzvahs means, to be defined later, to be elaborated upon later. You have to give them a little bit of a sampling. If they don't know anything, so then it's hard for them to become anything. But you don't have to spell out every single prat. What is necessary, though, is a complete Kabbalah. If the Ger says, well, I'm only mekabel some of the mitzvahs, I want to be Jewish, but I want to be Mechal Shabbos, I want to be Jewish, I want to eat treif, so that's already a very serious question. Is that called the Kabbalah's mitzvahs? But if the person is mekabel basically the mitzvahs, without knowing every single detail, presumably that's acceptable, at least after the fact, that is considered to be a valid Kabbalah's mitzvahs. However, what if that is lacking? What if that basic elementary Kabbalah's mitzvahs is not there? The person is not mekabel himself upon himself to perform the mitzvahs. So he goes through the procedures of geirus. He has a milan, he has tefillah, maybe his days in the base of mikdash even brought a korban. Everything's being authorized by a base, and everything is wonderful. One small technical quirk, he's not mekabel upon himself mitzvahs. So what does that mean? So if he says explicitly, I'm not mekabel mitzvahs, I don't want to keep Shabbos, I don't want to keep kosher, I'm never going to daven, I don't want anything. So that's pretty obvious. That's not considered to be a Kabbalah's mitzvahs. But that's usually not what happens. Usually what happens is as follows. We ask him a question. Do you accept upon yourself to keep all the mitzvahs? The response, Rabbi, whatever you say. Then, okay, do you accept upon yourself to keep Shabbos? You're not going to do malach on Shabbos. You're going to observe the Yom Tov. You're going to keep kosher. So somebody has already told him in advance, whatever the rabbi says, just nod your head and say, yes, absolutely, absolutely. He's got his fingers crossed behind his back. There's no way he's going to keep Shabbos. There's no way he's going to keep kosher. There's no way he's going to keep taras mishpacha. How are we so smart? How do we know that he's not going to keep it? So unfortunately, as we know, that very often the reason why he's here in the first place is because he wants to get married, and his Jewish boyfriend or girlfriend is encouraging him or her to become Jewish. And unfortunately, more often than not, it's not even the Jewish boyfriend or girlfriend who really cares. It's the parents, or there's a grandmother, there's a great grandmother from Europe who's still she's insisting that they go to the rabbi and convert. The question is this really a Kabbalah's mitzvahs? Can we really honestly say this meets the halachic requirement of Kabbalah's mitzvahs? So on the one hand, they're saying the Makabal the mitzvahs. They are saying the words. I'm Makabal. Hini Mukham Zun. I'm Makabal the mitzvahs. I'm going to keep Shabbos and Kashrus. But the rabbi realizes that obviously this prospective convert is not going to be more of a Shomer Torah mitzvahs than their other partner, than the Jewish partner. The Jewish partner isn't the Shomer Shabbos. Taras and Mishpacha, obviously they're not going to observe Taras and Mishpacha. So it's as if there's almost an explicit statement, in effect, to the contrary to what they're expressing with their words. So how does the halacha deal with this? On the one hand, they're quote unquote mekabel mitzvahs, at least klapei chutz, externally the mekabel mitzvahs, but it's clear as day to anyone objective that this doesn't really constitute an authentic, sincere kabbalas and mitzvahs. Does this qualify as a kabbalas and mitzvahs in halacha? So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked this question on many different occasions. Rav Moshe threw out a possible svara, a possible line of reasoning, which Rav Moshe ultimately rejected. Rav Moshe suggested there is a principle in halacha called dvarim shebelev einam dvarim. Namely, the halacha only takes into consideration what people say, not what people think in the heart of hearts. We don't enter into people's hearts. We can only work with what a person says. The Gemara actually gives an example of somebody who had a field, and they sold the field, thinking that they were going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and then somehow it didn't work out. See, yeah, those problems existed then also. And now they come back and they say, well, I want my field back. So the Beis Din said, what do you mean you want your field back? Did you stipulate at the time that you're only selling your field because you're going in Aliyah? So the person said, no, I didn't stipulate it, but that's what I was thinking. So the Gemara said, that's very nice what you were thinking, but Dvarim Shebelev, Einim Dvarim. The Halacha cannot recognize what you were thinking unless you actually verbalized it. So Rav Moshe suggested, maybe we can apply that principle to Geirus as well, that when the person says the Mekabel Mitzvahs, even though they may be thinking otherwise, so maybe we can ignore what they're thinking in their heart of hearts. So Rav Moshe rejects that line of reasoning based on another Gemara, where the Gemara says that the only time we ignore Dvarim Shebelev is only in a situation where it's not clear from context what the Dvarim Shebelev are. Case of selling a field. People sell the field for a million different reasons. So just because a person is selling his field doesn't necessarily mean that he's selling because he wants to go to Israel. But what if you have a situation where it's absolutely crystal clear to anybody who just looks objectively at the situation, we know what he's thinking. That's what's called in halacha, Dvarim Shebeliba Ovalev Kol Adam. So Rav Moshe says that we have no right to say Dvarim Shebeliba Einim Dvarim. So Rav Moshe says, if the Beis Din really believes that this person is not sincere, if Beis Din really thinks that this person is not going to be Shema Torah Mitzvahs, this is a very serious question. Can that really qualify as a Kabbalas HaMitzvahs? So this is perhaps one of the most critical issues in terms of Geirus. The Mila part of Geirus, we can figure that out. The Tevila part will figure it out. The carbon way for the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis Din will deal with. But the Kabbalas HaMitzvahs, that the Kabbalas HaMitzvahs has to be authentic, so that becomes a very, very tricky question. What's called an authentic Kabbalas HaMitzvahs? To what degree is it considered to be a Kabbalas HaMitzvahs? So far be it from me to, just like I couldn't answer the guy in Peru in 1 second, I'm not going to be able to answer this question. This is a Klal Yisrael question. This is a very, very serious question. This throws into serious question the validity of the entire Geirus. The Geirus had done without the proper Kabbalas HaMitzvahs. So, l'chora, at first glance, the Geirus is not acceptable. The Geirus is not acceptable. The person is still considered to be not Jewish. The question is, I would say as follows, I would say that if the person is willing to say, you know, I'm really not too excited about this religion, but I'm going to go along with it for my spouse or for other reasons, I'm going to keep Shabbos. I'm not doing it l'shem, the wonderful mitzvah, I'm not quite there yet, but I'm going to go through the motions of Shemir Shabbos, I'm going to keep a kosher home, I'm going to observe Taras Mishpach, I'm not quite there yet l'shma, then I'd say you're 100% correct. That's what the Rishonim write. That's the reason why the Gemara says that if a person converts for the purpose of marriage, even though l'chadchila, we shouldn't really deal with that, but the d'yevet is considered to be a ger, even though clearly it's a shalom l'shma, but there we have a right to say mitzvah shalom l'shma, but he's going to keep the mitzvahs there. Whereas over here, in today's world, so he's not going to keep the mitzvahs. We know clearly he's not going to keep the mitzvahs. That becomes a very, very serious question. The model from our scene. I would take issue with one or two points. That The idea that there was no hadasa mitzvahs, there was no even mitzvahs talos b'chamuros, so there are many mefarshim who say that was exactly the role of the aseres adibros, that the aseres adibros, Hashem didn't give them all the Torah at one moment. He gave them, in effect, a little bit of a sampling of the Torah. You have a chazal deriving from the entire parsha, the entire parsha of Maamon HaSinai. Again, parsha of Maamon HaSinai we're taking in a very extended version, because it started already at Yitzias Mitzrayim, so the Mila was already 7 weeks earlier, the Tefillah was, it's not even clear when the Karbanos were, before or afterwards, depending on the Rishonim, had a Limshan at the end of Parashat Mishpatim. So it's quite possible that the Aseres HaDibros also play a role in terms of being the Hodos HaMitzvahs or part of the Kabbalah HaMitzvahs. The answer to that dilemma, how do we resolve those two statements of Nas of Nishma on the one hand, and Kavalim HaGiyus on the other hand, is a very, very good question. It's a fascinating question. The Bali HaTosos, you could spend the whole Shavuos night talking about that question. I'm not sure whether that necessarily is going to impact in terms of the halachas of Hilchos Geiros. The assumption usually is, and there is a little bit of a question how to read this Rambam, because the Rambam, you're correct in what you're saying, that the Rambam does, when he speaks about the Geiros of the Nishei Shimshon and the Nishei Shlomo, the Rambam does throw into question in a certain sense about the Kabbalah Samitzvahs there, but the Rambam does introduce Hilchos Geiros by saying that the Geir is coming, the Kabbalah of all Torah. The Rambam does use that phrase, the Kabbalah of Torah. There is, you are correct, there is a question. Okay, that's the question, what the purpose of those mitzvahs were necessarily, whether that was part of the game. Okay, you're right that there is somewhat of a question how to read the Rambam Shita. It's very hard to bring a proof. It's very hard to bring halachic proof from Kavalim HaGigis when it's not clear what exactly the context of that medrash is in terms of the fact that the pasuk does say Na'aseh B'Nishma. So again, depending on what the answer to that question will be, may have impact on this. Just to conclude the last controversial topic, just in case the last one wasn't controversial enough. So in the sixth of the Maimakomos, the Gemara introduced to us a whole different type of Geiros, which has problems in and of itself. We're not going to have enough time to elaborate on all of it, just to be aware of. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksubis and Daf Yud Aleph and Aleph Amar Rav Huna Ger Katan Madbilin Oso Al Das Beis Din. You can have a situation where you have a child who is being converted. Beis Din is authorizing the Geirus, the conversion of a child, and here this seems to break all the rules of Hilchos Geirus, because we're doing something on behalf of someone who is under the age of being a gadol, under the age of bar bas mitzvah. So normally they're considered to be a lav bar das. How could we even begin to discuss converting somebody at that stage? So says the Gemara, it's not a problem. I kamashlan deschusul. The Gemara says that it works based on the halachic principle of zoch v'adam shalav afanav. I can do something beneficial for you without you being aware of it, or in this case, without you halachically being able to do it yourself. The principle of zchus zoch v'adam shalav afanav. It is for this reason, at least the way many Rishonim read this Gemara, that the Gemara tells us that since we're doing something beneficial for the child when he or she reaches the age of bar bas mitzvah, what if they decide not so beneficial for me? And that maybe the person would rather not be Jewish, so they have the ability to uproot the Geiros, to in effect cancel the Geiros retroactively, since the whole Geiros, the entire conversion, was predicated on the fact that it was beneficial. So if it turns out really not to be beneficial, then the Geiros can be revoked even retroactively. This issue of Ger Katan is also a very, very controversial issue in terms of applying this principle properly, since the simple reading of the Gemara is, it's predicated on the fact that it's a schus, that it's something beneficial, so perhaps one has to really take a look and see, is it really beneficial or not? Sometimes it's beneficial, if the child is going to be raised as a Shomer Torah Mitzvah, that's clearly beneficial, that's a wonderful thing. What if the child is not going to be raised as a Shomer Torah Mitzvah? It's a very, very serious question, halacha. Again, we're not going to be able to decide that question either in 1 second. A very, very serious serious issue in halacha. If you have a situation where it's not so clear that it's beneficial for the child, do we have a right to actually go ahead and convert somebody? And if we go ahead and convert somebody when the halacha doesn't permit us to do so, is the geirus even going to be acceptable even after the fact? Again, we've touched on some potentially hot topics in terms of hilchos geirus, but as we started off the shiur by saying that this is an area of halacha which is so critical, an area of halacha that's relevant for all of Klal Yisrael, an area of halacha that affects generations to come. So this is something that hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us the proper guidance to be able to apply these principles in halacha and to be able to pass in the Shabbos correctly.
Anyone who's interested in finding out how to get a friend for next year, please try and contact me. Everyone's welcome to partake of the breakfast.